Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, home of The Ocho, which is being resurrected this weekend so we can all watch cherry pit spitting competitions.
Ryan Lambert, just this podcast, no big thing about it.
Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
And you're in Puck Soup, and Dad of the Year, let's not forget about that, hanging with the kiddies as you are.
Yeah.
Welcome to the first quarantine edition. I don't even think that last week's counts. That was more of just a reactive thing. Nice timing on your part, Sean, member of the Illuminati, not being around for that, to be honest. Are you like one of those many CEOs that have quit their jobs in the last year, all part of a secret cabal that knew this was coming, according to members of my family that are now part of QAnon?
Let's just say if I knew this was coming, I would not have picked last Wednesday to do international travel.
So tell me about getting home, by the way.
In hindsight, it was not fun.
I saw a tweet about that. You were in Florida, was it?
No, we're in South Carolina. We have my in-laws are down there, so we figured we would go down as our March break trip as a family, go down and see them, do some fun family stuff. And we left a few days early last Wednesday, and it was surreal because Wednesday morning we left and this virus was a problem. It was a news story. There were some hockey games that might get played in empty arenas and that kind of thing. And we got up at the crack of dawn. We flew out. We had a nice lunch with the in-laws. And by that night, it was as if the whole world had gone to hell. And we were sitting there going, like, what are we even doing down here? And at what point do we have to think about going back? Because we were scheduled to be down for a week. And within a few days, my wife and I are looking at each other going, we don't even know if we're going to be able to get back if we wait a week. So
wow,
we made the decision to come back early. Tried to come back on Saturday, ran into some problems at the airport, just typical. You know, flight got canceled. There was a maintenance problem and weren't able to get back to Ottawa, but decided to, we asked the guy, can you get us to Toronto instead? And he said, yeah, and we figured that was close enough. And so
wow,
did that and stayed in a hotel and figured the rest of it out the next day. And everyone got home safe and sound and everyone's good and healthy and all that stuff. So all's well that ends well, but it was just very surreal. You know, if you're Canadian, you travel to the States all the time and it's just something you just take for granted. And then to suddenly be down there and be like, I don't know if my flight in 2 days is even going to happen because of everything that's going on. It was a very strange situation, but like I say, we made it and we're good.
But obviously, like, it's okay, because if you had to stay down here, we obviously have our shit in order pretty well when it comes to this virus. I mean, we've been talking about
great.
We've been talking about how important it is to get ahead of this thing for months. So, I mean, no.
Yeah.
If you want to be anywhere, it's in the good old US of A.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, you guys are doing fantastic. And we were brokenhearted to leave.
How were airports at that point?
On the Saturday, they were... it was an airport, really. I don't know if it felt that different. It probably wasn't, because I think by set, like, we flew through Charlotte, which is a decent-sized airport.
Yes.
And I think
initials CLIT, I believe, right? Charlotte
right.
Airport?
That is the one. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had some trouble finding it at first, but it was eventually we did.
There it is.
Okay.
We did. Circled around, but got there eventually, and it was... my guess is probably like half the people who were supposed to travel had already canceled their plans, and half
right.
the people who were traveling later had moved them up. And so I'll say this. It was like we flew out on American, the our flight out of Myrtle Beach didn't even get off the ground. But the guys who were there were working hard. They were, you know, they were doing their best. And when we got, we actually got into Charlotte because the guy told us there was a 10 o'clock flight to Toronto. It was 10 o'clock at night at this point. And at 9:15, when I was at the gate to check in, she looks at my ticket and goes, "You're not on this flight. You were supposed to be on an 8 o'clock flight."
Eek.
Which, and I'm sitting there going like, you got to be kidding me. Please tell me there's four of us. Please tell me there's four seats on this plane. And she looks it up and looks at me and goes, "There's three seats left on the last plane to Toronto."
Oh my God.
And I'm just like, I literally like started to laugh because it was just like, are you kidding? But then it turned out there was something else had freed up and it was okay. But then they had to go on, they had to call the main office for tech support because it wasn't letting them book us or something.
Wow.
And the point is we got home and everybody did their thing and nobody was panicking. I mean, there were people walking around wearing masks and all that stuff, but it was, you know, people kept their stuff together and yeah, we thanked them for it.
You would have stayed home. You would have stayed in the States, right? You would have taken the sacrifice and been like, "Leave me behind. You guys go." If there's only three seats,
I don't know what we would have done. The plan B. Well, I think we were already on plan B or C by then. But at some point, we were going to just get a car somewhere and just do the drive. But the drive is it's 2 days. So you know what's the border going to be in 2 days? It was was a really unpleasant situation. But I say that being fully aware that there's lots of people having much more unpleasant weeks than we had. And as I've said a few times, all is well that ends well.
Speaking of masks, you could tell how aimless and empty and defeated many hockey fans are feeling right now because PK Subban put on Instagram a photo of him and Lindsey Vonn both wearing surgical masks going out shopping, and no one had a problem with it.
Wow.
So the single most divisive player in the NHL was doing the thing everyone says you don't need to do if you are not sick, and actually is a wasteful thing to do because literal hospitals can't get masks right now, and actually no one said anything about it. I was fucking
but
stunned.
But here's the thing, Greg. If he's wearing a mask, that means we can't see him smile. So
that's right.
That's really what we've wanted from him all along. Just
I think that as we me and you, Ryan, we'll talk about our deals in a second. I think as we go forward, there is going to be a lot more angst about the sort of class separation between athletes and people like us. You already saw it with some of the testing that's being done and how did you guys get the tests and things of that nature. My wife was telling me a story also about like an Instagram influencer who had a rich doctor friend that administered a coronavirus test in the back of his car on her, which sounds dirty, but I think it was actually on the up and up. And with the thing with the Nets and the whole thing, I think that's going to be a major, major ball already rolling down the hill and who gets tested and when and why are athletes getting tested if they're self-isolating like the rest of us are. So I don't know. It was interesting. Ryan, what's up with you, buddy?
Hanging out, man. You know, I took my dog to the beach yesterday. There's a beach near our house that is not often full of people or anything like that. And just walk around there and hung out for like an hour and a half. But otherwise, yeah, I'm just playing a lot of video games, I guess.
What are I forgot to ask both of you guys, what are the like restrictions in place right now? Where you are. I mean, like you mentioned traveling to the beach, that's probably not a thing. I know in some places there are curfews and things of that nature. First off, Sean, what is it like right now where you are?
We don't have any formal curfews or anything like that. We've got everybody has been asked to stay home. They are in the process of closing all the non-essential stuff. Schools are closed here in Ontario. They'd already announced that. In our case, because we returned from the United States, we've been asked to do the full self-isolation thing for 14 days. So we have not even really been out of the house other than to walk down the street and check the mail. But that's something that everyone is being asked to do. They have not made it mandatory yet, but at least in my general impression is that for the most part, people are doing it. Like it's kind of a ghost town up here. And, for all the good and bad that implies. But yeah, it's there's a lot that's been put in place. But so far most of it is still an ask and not an order.
And Ryan, are most of the Dunkin's still 24 hours or
You know what? I haven't been, when did I either run on Saturday or Sunday morning, just to a drive-through one. And, there was nobody there. It was wild. Usually there's there's like 10, 15 cars in line. I think I waited for 2 minutes, not even. That was a really like, oh boy, it's real bad out here. Kind of a feeling where it's like, fuck, nobody's even in line for their fucking iced coffee with the insulated cup for the quote unquote sleeve.
They're probably all lined up at Trader Joe's already that morning. Like that's the craziest thing that's happened here. I think is the supermarket bit where like this speaks to the fucking Bay Area more than anything else. Both Trader Joe's and Whole Foods had like lines outside the door and like line control things that you see when people are lined up to like buy movie tickets on the first day or whatever. Like it was pretty surreal, to see that. And like, I think TJ's is doing this sort of like, we're only letting certain amount of people in the place to keep the social distancing thing going on and what have you. But I feel like we were probably about a week and a half ahead of everybody else insofar as the panic setting in, because like the toilet paper started getting sold out about 2.5 weeks ago. And, it's been surreal to see everybody else sort of being impacted by it now. And then it's also really surreal to see places that simply don't give a fuck, like Florida, apparently, which again, you'd figure you'd give a fuck if you have all the old people in the country living in your state. But that's just my opinion. For here, like Ruby, this was kind of crazy. So Ruby, and I had been working at home, you know, for the last couple weeks and reconfigured the apartment. So she has her place to work and then I got my spot to work. So that'll be good and healthy. I think if we were still living in our rail car apartment in Manhattan, we might be at each other's throats already. Cause it's a little bit more compact than the place that we have now. she had to go back to Apple, to pick up some, stuff like a monitor and stuff. So she can kind of create her own workstation here. And they had a thing, and this was crazy. They had a have you seen the tents that they're setting up to do the drive-through coronavirus testing in places? So they had that, but they didn't have the tests. But what they did was you couldn't go in the building and retrieve your personal effects before someone took your temperature to make sure you weren't running a fever. So you drive up to the thing, they zap your forehead with an instant a thermometer. And then you're then allowed to go in the building and get your shit. I was like, wow, this is, I mean, A, pretty smart. B, like fucking right out of a fucking movie. So that was her deal. And then around here, it's like everybody else. It's like ghost town. We have shelter in place restrictions, so we're not really supposed to go anywhere that you don't need to. I think people for the most part are keeping to that outside of the supermarkets, which I guess are essential. And In-N-Out, which is always going to have a drive-through line, no matter when it is. The work goes on. I think from like a work perspective, the thing about flying, I'm supposed to go see family at the end of the month. It's kind of a bummer that I can't go. But I still have the tickets. I'm not sure what to do yet. I think I'm going to have to figure it, like call United at some point to cancel them, but I don't want to do it until it's like a few days before I have to go, just because I'm sure they're being inundated with that kind of shit.
We were supposed to go. We were going to go to Paris in April, and the airline already was like, "That's not happening. Your flight's not going to take place." So,
yeah,
now we're not going to Paris.
I had to explain to my mom last night when I talked to her that, like, she's like, "You're still coming out, right?" And I'm like, "No." Like, what are you talking about, Mom? What? How am I going? You know, there's not going to be a flight. I can't leave the house. It's only like essential travel. And, you know, it's not going to happen. So God bless her sweet little soul for thinking that I was still going to be the only one on a plane. Now, granted, the Wi-Fi would have been terrific. My God, I could probably stream anything on that plane if I'm there alone, but still can't go out there. So it's pretty barren. And so, you know, the town I live in right now has this little beautiful little downtown area. And that's been like my entry point to really sort of understanding what's probably happening all across the country, which is that, you know, the bar is closed. The restaurant bars are closing at like 8 because of the curfew stuff. And you can do takeout, but you can't sit down. And like all of the little shops, the clothing shops and the knickknack stores and everything, they basically like have closed in some cases indefinitely and in other cases for a few weeks just to see how things play out. And I'm just like, fuck, you know, if this is happening here, I mean, this is probably the same situation in every, you know, suburb in the country right now. So it sucks. I know it's Pollyanna to believe this. And I know in some cases businesses have said this is what they're doing. One of those businesses being the Hockey News. I just do hope that like people that do get laid off or furloughed can get their jobs back, like when this eventually passes. But I don't know if that's a trusting business to do the right thing is not necessarily
that's correct. Yeah,
in our best interests, I think. But you know, the Hockey News guy did an interview with The Athletic with Sean Fitzgerald from The Athletic last night, saying that it's in his intention to rehire Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy and Matt Larkin and Sam McCaig and others that are friends when this thing blows over. But I think the other thing about that too that he didn't really address is how many people that subscribe to the Hockey News are now not going to subscribe to the Hockey News because they decided to like lay off their staff within days of the NHL's announcement. It's a tough look.
Yeah,
then if you do that, do you end up just hurting the writers that might get their jobs back? By, you know, hurting the bottom line of the publication. It's a tough nut to crack.
The thing with all of the sports media stuff is, the sports will come back at some point. We don't know when, but it will come back. And there was, you know, as an industry, sports was doing fine. This isn't, you know, this isn't something where these were poorly run businesses or, you know, had some sort of flawed business plan. This is kind of an out of nowhere lightning bolt. And in theory, someday when sports comes back and then everything goes back to normal, that should go back to normal too. It's just a question of how you get there and how you bridge that gap. And especially any publications or sites or companies that were already maybe struggling a bit, it's tough. I don't know. It's hard to find a ton of optimism in a lot of things these days.
Right. And I think, and we'll get into this when we talk more about like the playoff format shit that people are bandying about. I mean, the great unknown is how society snaps back when this does pass. And I got into a conversation the other day, I think it was with Jason and Mike on Vancouver Radio, about like recessions versus this pandemic. And like recessions are difficult because you don't know how they'll snap back. You don't know why they'll snap back. You don't know when they'll snap back. We at least get a sense that this stuff will pass based on what's happening in China and South Korea and other places. But then when it does, what does life look like?
I
hear all this talk about like, oh, we'll just open the arenas again and the people will come and watch the playoff games and shit. I'm like, if you're somebody who's been laid off for 3 months and you don't get your job back, like what fucking priority are you giving to NHL playoff tickets?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I think it's really sort of naive to believe that, you know, any sense of true normalcy is going to return within, a few months of this thing ending. I don't know. I do know that I probably should have been more, thrifty in my spending at supermarkets before this thing hit, because I definitely played into the pandemic mindset when you're in the place and you're running around and there's no bread and there's no pasta and there's no toilet paper and there's no hand sanitizer. I think I bought some things that I'm like, it's that moment where you hold a can of artichoke hearts in your hand and you're just like, you know what? We might be quarantined. We might need artichoke hearts, and you throw it in your fucking basket. And there's a lot of that sort of purchasing that I think I did in these goddamn supermarkets because you're flipping out. And Trader Joe's is probably the worst of that, just because you go in that frozen food section. You're like, what if I need calamari rings? And you throw it in your bag, and then you're on your fucking way. So nobody – don't binge buy, I think, is my advice to you if you are going to a panicky supermarket. Since we last did the show – the NHL, well, Ryan and I talked about the NHL doing its pause, but since we last did the show, a bunch of minor leagues all canceled their seasons, like got super aggressive, no longer pausing, canceling their seasons. On my other podcast, I talked to the commissioners of the Southern Professional Hockey League and the ECHL about their deals. And I was really surprised how candid they were about saying, look, like, we don't know through all this uncertainty whether even the teams that we had playing this year are going to all come back and play next year, which is really kind of a frightening prospect. But man, I give kudos to anybody who stepped up and canceled their season. Cause I think, you know, if you're a league and you know what your finances are, just fucking pull the plug. Like don't dick around with it.
Yeah. Like, I don't think they were like, you know what? Like, they weren't in a position to do anything but what they did, right? Like, right. They're not billion-dollar industries, so they're just going to be like, well, we don't have the money to pretend. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of think the NHL is maybe doing a little bit where – we'll talk about it later, but, like, the idea of, well, we're going to have a 48-team playoff that goes in September and October, and then we're going to play 82 games next season. Is, yeah, okay. I fucking bet you are. Like, they don't have the finances to live in fucking fantasy land like that, so they get to go, well, that's it. Bye. Everybody have fun.
So it's the NHL, part of the AHL, a resurrected California Golden Seals team. I'm trying to figure out how we get to 48 teams.
They'll figure it out. Look, they gotta get these gate revenues back, man. Like, they're not gonna.
Everybody's invited.
Yeah, fuck it. Half the KHL. Really? Who cares?
I love it. Open Challenge Cup. That's the way.
Yeah,
I'm sure,
let's go.
Yeah, Sean, was there ever an Open Challenge Stanley Cup back in the day, or was it just always like a league format type thing?
Back in the days of the NHL, no. But like in the early Stanley Cup days, yeah, you just showed up and we're like, we want to play you for the Stanley Cup. And we've got like seven guys and six pairs of skates. And all right, that was it. You just played for the Stanley Cup until, you know, one of the goalies fell through the ice. And then that was it. Stanley Cup champion. We could go back to that. See,
that's tremendous.
Do you guys remember in the 2005 lockout when it was – when the season was canceled and there was like these dudes in Canada tried to mm-hmm. challenge for the cup, and they made the art, there was some sort of legal or
there's like a bylaw about the cup. Yeah.
That they wanted like the Canadian government to force the NHL, and yeah, didn't work out. and that scrappy bunch was the Carolina Hurricanes and they 2006.
I loved that idea, by the way. I thought that was one of my favorite things from the lockout, was trying to like work the system, and I wanted that scene from like the sports movie where like Gary Bettman's saying, you know, this can't possibly happen, and then like the NHL lawyer who's not Gary Bettman comes up to him and says, actually, sir, bylaw 14.35 says they do have a legal right, and then we go from there.
Yep.
We should just write the script during our downtime.
No rule that a dog can't challenge for the Stanley Cup. So.
Exactly. Yeah, I do love Open Challenge Stanley Cup. Now I'm going to be thinking about that. Beer league teams all forming together, trying to take on the, you know, the Colorado Avalanche for the cup. The KHL.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, some random 40-something-year-old dude isn't going to beat an NHL team. That would never happen. You can't.
That would never happen. Can't happen at all.
Do you realize that the Zamboni game was like 3.5 weeks ago? Doesn't it feel like 30 years?
Yeah, I don't remember any of it. Like, it's just the
I saw
the
like
same,
a tweet
the
by the guy's
time,
wife
yeah.
show up on my timeline, and I was like, oh yeah, right. I remember you guys. Jesus.
Do oral histories get moved up during quarantine? Like, if it's a month from the David Ayers games, does the oral history become valid?
I would read, like, an oral history of this morning at this point. I would reminisce nostalgically about better times.
Oh God! If you, by the way, speaking of better times, and if you're listening to this podcast, you do probably have a certain affinity for dark comedy and gallows humor. Norm MacDonald did 10 minutes on the coronavirus.
It was very funny.
I haven't seen that yet. Very I'm like, funny. I'm saving that in my back pocket for.
I think the line that will stick with me is, "Hey, remember when you didn't know how you were going to die? You know, like last week." It's so goddamn good. And you could tell he was like freestyling.
Yeah,
it too.
Of course he was.
Beautiful. Yeah,
it was just
fantastic.
He was just going.
It's him in a tracksuit with a Red Bull on stage, fucking freestyling coronavirus material, and Norm MacDonald, no less, doing it. So you know it's good. The KHL tried to press on until teams from Kazakhstan and Finland said, "Hey, we're not going to do this anymore. We're just going to leave," leading to the coach of Dynamo Moscow saying, "They should be drummed out of the league. You know what the problem with foreigners is that they're foreigners." So that's always a good time.
And what accent was that supposed to be?
That was definitely Russian.
Okay.
Yep. That's it. Yeah, okay. You know, listen, they're not all great. And by the way,
on that
we agree. It's his own part of Russia that you're probably not familiar with. Impressionistan, I believe it's called. So the KHL stopped. Everybody else in Europe stopped. Most North American leagues stopped. Yet yesterday during the day, Belarus was playing its playoff games and streaming them on YouTube to the delight of hundreds of hockey fans who randomly found it on Twitter. I couldn't fucking believe it. And it was like a full arena, too. It was so bizarre. But Belarus plays on while the rest of the world is canceled. So while all this shit's been going on, the first few days of it were spent figuring out which teams and their owners were gigantic assholes and which ones were going to pay their arena workers for missed dates. And to the credit of hockey fans, a lot of the gigantic assholes, not all of them, but a lot of them, were then shamed into paying their players. Now, the tricky part about this, boys, is that there are some teams that flat out said, yeah, we're just going to give everybody their salary. And then there are some other teams that were like, yeah, we're going to establish a fund.
Yeah.
And then there are other teams that are just like, yeah, we're going to help them out. And then the Bruins are like, fuck no. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, we only made all our money in concessions. So I feel like the work isn't quite done for the fans that felt passionate about this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, it's a situation where, yeah, like, you know, everybody's like, oh, even Eugene Melnyk is stepping up to the plate, and isn't that... But Eugene Melnyk stepping up to the plate was, we'll talk to everybody individually and see what their individual needs are, and I'll cut them a check for $38.
Yeah. Which at the end of this, they're like, all going to end up paying Eugene, probably. Like,
yeah, that's right.
We had a good conversation.
It's going to be a real high vig interest loan here, you know, like, just fucking, yeah. And, you know, Buffalo, I don't know if it's changed, but obviously, like, the big criticism with Buffalo was, we'll pay everybody if the games get canceled, but right now they're just postponed, so fuck you, I guess.
Yeah, what a bizarre, and like, they put that out there almost like a point of pride, like, yeah, look what we're trying to do for people. When they eventually cancel games in several months, like, we'll take care of these people. Like, what the fuck, man? Somebody from the Buffalo media asked me over DM whether the Pegulas were worried if they would have to pay people twice. If, like, they pay people now and then they have to pay them again if there actually are games.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, people need money now. Work out the details later. Who cares?
Yeah. What was that thing Terry Pegula said when he bought the Sabres? Like, if I'm looking to make money, I'll go dig another natural gas well.
I'll, like, go frack off a little bit more. Yeah.
Like, but now all of a sudden he has to turn out his pockets. Like, oh, I couldn't possibly pay these people. I'm only a billionaire a few times over. What am I supposed to do?
Well, that's shit. It's sucks. No, but it's a good point by him. I mean, like, listen, he's obviously deserving of some sort of bailout. I mean, it's not like, you know, he's the casino industry asking for a bailout. Oh, right. The casino industry is asking for a bailout. That's right.
Yeah, he should just think of it as, I don't know, a third of 1 year of Billy Leno's deal. Just if you're look, if you're going to give that kind of money out, you don't get to also be like, well, look, I don't know.
And when the government denies his petition, he's like, why? And they're like, because you should have known he's not a center. He never played center. He was a wing that you tried to make center. He's like, all right, it's fair enough. Christian Ehrhoff deal wasn't any better, by the way.
I mean, that's the problem. If the NHL gave them relief for that buyout money, maybe that could help some people out. But what are you going to do? Indeed. I'm sure they're still paying for that, right? The Ehrhoff? Yeah.
The Ehrhoff one at the very least, probably. Yeah. I mean, like, the Jeremy Jacobs, everybody knows what the deal with Jeremy Jacobs is, but like, has there been any kind of uptick in anger and ire about the Bruins and the situation in your neck of the woods, Ryan? Or is this sort of just like there's so much other shit going on that no one cares?
Yeah, I think everybody's like, that's really fucked up. The state attorney general had a tweet about it either last night or this morning saying like,
oh wow,
we hope Mr. Jacobs steps up to the plate and does what's right, you know, that kind of thing. But like, you know, I don't think they can force anybody to do anything. So Ehrhoff buyout is going for another like 5 or 6 years minimum. I just looked it up.
The fucking Bobby Bonilla contract.
That's
of the
right.
NHL. Or the Rick DiPietro contract to Buffalo.
Through 2027-28 is when the buyout money finally grinds to a stop for old Christian Ehrhoff. $857,000 a year for another 8 years. Good for him.
Incredible. Incredible.
Good for
and,
him.
He got to fly in the private plane also.
That's
to sign
true.
His contract.
That's true.
Right. I what a fucking embarrassing look for the Bruins, like where their players step up immediately. Like, and they stepped up immediately in the way that tells you. Well, no, it tells you that like they know that their owner's not going to do anything, right? So like they got to do it on their own.
Didn't they just blast out a link to like a fucking GoFundMe? I don't know that
they did, but like that's fine. That's, well, you're trying to help. You're doing what you can. Everybody's doing what they can.
Yeah,
paying the workers. Ottawa got its first team to get a positive test for coronavirus after.
Well, we all saw that coming, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, come on, obviously, right? They got it in Uber. No, they got it somewhere in California, probably. They were one of the teams that played here in San Jose after the local government recommended not playing games, and the Sharks were like, "But we need to make money these next three games. Then we'll get out of town and come back, and hopefully this will all have blown over." So the Kings and the Ducks are all saying, hey, you know, we took precautions, blah, 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 blah. Sharks really haven't really said anything. And one of their arena workers, tested positive in recent days. So the Senators, a male player in his 20s, which really narrows it down on the Senators, tested positive for coronavirus. How was that played in the local media there, Sean?
Well, I mean, as you'd expect, it's a big story, although the fact that it's the first certainly makes it newsworthy, but I think people understand that we're a week or two down the road. This is probably, it's probably going to seem quaint to think back to the time where there was one NHL player that had tested positive. It's, you know, it'll be the first of many, and that doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean that there'll be bad outcomes to that. They're, you know, these are young, healthy guys. You know, we've seen in the NBA where there's been quite a few more positive tests, and so far at least doesn't sound like anyone's having especially severe symptoms. So that's good news. Hopefully, it's the same in the NHL. But yeah, it's kind of like you knew this was coming. There was absolutely no way that we were going to go through what we're going to go through over the next few weeks and have the NHL escape unscathed. And you cross your fingers and hope for the best outcomes for everybody involved. And that's all you can do.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the fact that there's going to be a lot more positive tests. And I got to give Bettman credit. Like, his eye was on the prize on all this thing, which is that we can dick around with the idea of empty arena games and all this other stuff, but like, the minute there's a positive test in one of these sports, then that's it. That's the whole ball game. Then you just got to shut down.
I think the NBA understood that, and then the NHL understood that once the NBA goes, there's no way. I mean, that's it. And you know what? Like, I not to get ahead, because I know we're probably going to talk about what it could look like when we resume, but that's something we got to prepare for. Like, the NHL could come back and have everything all set to go, and then you get another positive test or two. And what do you do then? Like, does everything just shut back down? And at that point, you'd probably be done. It's tough. And I mean, I guess what you hope out of all of this is, first, obviously, you hope that the player that's tested positive now, you hope he turns out to be okay.
And everybody around him.
And everyone around him, yeah, exactly.
That's the real thing, yeah.
And then the other thing is, you hope that if at some point they do piece together where this came from and how it happened, that it's not something that you look back on and very obviously say, he should never have been in that position. He shouldn't have been in that building. He should not have been at that game. That game shouldn't have been held. And as a result of that, this happened. I mean, that would be an ugly situation all around. So I guess we...
Yeah, and I think that speaks more to the thing that happened in the last 2 weeks in a lot of places, Ohio being one of them, where it was sort of like, we recommend you don't do this. Well, you could recommend a lot of things to a lot of people, but they're still going to do it, right? Like, you got to tell them you fucking can't.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, Santa Clara County just said, no, fuck, just shut the fucking arena down.
Mm-hmm.
And then that took care of the arena problem. And so I think maybe the lesson to be learned in a lot of these cases is you got to be emphatic about it. Like, you got to say, hey, we gave you a weekend and look what happened. Everybody went to goddamn bars. So we're going to shut the bars down now. Sorry. Like, that's the thing you got
to
do.
Yeah. And you have to, because if I own a bar and you own a bar and I want to close, but you're going to stay open and all my customers are going to go to you, and now my business goes, like, you just have to say no. Everyone, we're shutting everyone down. And that's the end of it.
Yeah. And like, you know, for that brief day where Kid Rock's boot scootin' roofie bar or whatever the fuck in Nashville was trying to be defiant about staying open, despite everybody saying that all the shit on Broadway should shut down. Like, it's, who needs that in society at this point? But yeah, the testing thing is going to happen, and Ottawa was the first out of the gate. So you mentioned the players being healthy. How do we feel about here's how I'm staying fit videos from NHL players? We've seen some rollerblading. We've seen some workouts. And we are now seeing several in which they are soccer dribbling toilet paper rolls as part of the toilet paper challenge that people are doing. Do you like these videos? Or do you not care to see them?
I think, yeah, who cares? There was one in the, I can't remember who it was, but it was an NBA player was just doing like laps in their hallway. And another NBA player commented and said, you're going to need to do about 10,000 of those for that to make a difference. You're going like 15 feet. Who cares? And it's like, yeah, I mean, look, as long as the NHL doesn't have all its players singing Imagine, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Oh, God. That was a rough one, man. Have you seen that yet, Sean?
I have not, no.
You're all set. Don't investigate further.
No, it's officially the new Cats. You have to see it to understand it. It's a bunch of celebrities, many of whom, bravely, Ryan, are not wearing their makeup, singing the John Lennon classic Imagine. Now, the chances are pretty good that on some TV show in the last several years, John Legend has sung Imagine.
I would
imagine,
sure. You're right about that.
Because if it's on TV and you have money,
yep,
John Legend's going to be on your show. No, it's Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman herself, and a bunch of other celebrities. Natalie Portman, Cyclops, James Marsden, oodles of Jimmy Fallon, I think, was in it.
He unfortunately was in it, yes.
Yeah, and they all sing a different line from Imagine. So it's kind of like We Are the World, but terrible and also doesn't raise any money. So
that sounds awesome.
There you go.
I'll check that out for sure.
Please do.
I mean, if Jimmy Fallon's in it, it's got to be golden. So
it's going to be great, yeah.
It's fantastic. And he doesn't even play a little xylophone. He actually, I think, just sings the song. It's great. But anyway, it's a weird time, and eventually it's not going to be a weird time. And on the day, ladies and gentlemen, that they say it's all good, it's all clear, and we can lift some of these restrictions, you don't have to be quarantined, you can get on with life, you're going to want to look your best. And you can look your best with our friends at the Black Tux.
Really bad. Really bad transition.
You know what?
The Black Tux believes
now
that every
is not
groom,
the time to be criticizing Greg's.
Yeah.
We've got to all be.
That's exactly right. You should be nicer to me during this time of crisis.
You had so much time to come up with a better one than that. You're not doing anything.
I've been very busy.
Yeah, you can tell.
I've binged the entire season of Beat Shazam on Fox with Jamie Foxx. I've cleaned the house a couple times. Taken the dog for the dog had diarrhea this week, which is great. That's something
perfect
you definitely
timing.
Want. Yeah, perfect timing. Well, actually, the thing about that was I had to run to 7 different grocery stores to find fucking pureed pumpkin. That's the thing that makes her tummy feel better. So I had to go to find pureed pumpkin, which, by the way, for future reference, ladies and gentlemen, in the baking aisle, not in the vegetable aisle, just so you know. Because who eats it
that makes
when it's
sense.
Not inside of a fucking pie? The Black Tux believes that every groom deserves, remember weddings, deserves a better experience when it comes to finding formal wear, a suit or a tuxedo for their big day. Did you know that the Black Tux was actually started by two guys that had one of the worst tuxedo fittings you could possibly imagine?
Yes, I did one of their ad reads before, so I do know that.
I could also imagine some pretty bad tuxedo fittings, but I could also imagine some pretty good ones. What I love about the Black Tux is that they have an easy online ordering process that brings your suit or tuxedo straight to you, so none of that awkwardness with the guy with the tape measure. Just pick a style at theblacktux.com, request a free home try-on so you can feel the fit and quality before you commit. You could do that thing where you put the full tux on, you stand in front of your full-length mirror, you adjust your sleeves, you know, you look good, you look at the mirror and say, damn, I look good. If online isn't your style, the Black Tux has showrooms all over the country where you can find your fit and plan your look. From there, they'll ship your order 2 weeks before your wedding. 2 weeks, so you can check it out one last time. Whether you're buying your outfit or looking to rent, you won't find a formal wear experience or designs like the ones you'll find at the Black Tux. If you want your wedding to be remembered for the right reasons, like, for example, it happening, that would be a pretty impressive thing. Order your suit or tuxedo at theblacktux.com. And enjoy 10% off with code PUCK. That's theblacktux.com. All one big schmaz. Theblacktux.com. Code PUCK for 10% off your purchase. The Black Tux, formal wear for the moment. The minute they started handing out those bans on mass gatherings, I started to think about all the weddings I've been to and whether I would have made the quarantine cut. If they could only have like 50 people at the wedding, would I have been... Because I'm usually seated at the table where you feel like maybe you are on the chopping block, potentially, like way in the fucking corner.
Yeah, like the friends table, but not the good friends table.
Not good friends
the
table, yeah.
The co-workers table.
Yeah.
A co-workers table.
Yeah.
You will not be introduced to my parents' table.
Yeah, a hodgepodge or potpourri table. Hey, how do you know the groom? Oh, I got into a traffic accident with him once and exchanged information. You know, that kind of table. I'm usually there. So I feel like I would not have made the quarantine cut at least 30% of the weddings I've been to. All right, so what comes next for the NHL is the thing that people are talking about, despite the fact that we are probably 3 months away from coming back. Bill Daly has said that the NHL and the NHLPA can negotiate a artificial salary cap number,
right,
that might keep things sort of the way they are this year for next year,
right,
which
they have
is
to.
I guess They have to do that, right?
They cannot raise the salary cap. They cannot.
They can't raise it, but what they can't, because I've, and this is worth talking about just because I've heard from some readers who are confused on this point, because we all know that next year's salary cap is based on this year's revenue. So we've lost 15% of the season. There's a very good chance we're going to lose the entire playoffs, which is a huge chunk of revenue. Like if the NHL's revenue for this year is 65% of what was projected, or 65% of what last year was, does that mean the salary cap goes down by a third? And in theory, based on the automatic formula, it would, but that doesn't benefit anybody. If you're going to play a full year next year, there's no reason that both sides wouldn't sit down and say, that's not how we're going to work it going forward. It would be Armageddon for roster management and for every team. Yeah. And that doesn't, like, nobody benefits from that. The owners don't win. The owners don't get to spend less. They still, they're going to, I would put aside concerns over salary cap. They have the ability to figure it out. Whether they actually can sit down and figure it out without it turning into a big drawn out fight like everything else these two sides try to do is a different story. But yeah, the salary cap's not going to go down by $20 million next year, but it's also not going to go up to $88 million or whatever they were talking about just a few weeks ago.
No.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was so funny. They were like, "Oh, it could be as high as $88 million," and then it was immediately like, "Except we're not going to play a third of the season, right. So maybe not so much."
Asterisk contingent on revenue coming in.
Yeah,
the numbers that I got from a player source were if they don't complete the rest of the regular season, that's about $100 million that they lose. If they don't play the playoffs, that's $250 million that they would lose.
Ooh.
So you're talking about $5 billion down to maybe 4.6 as far as revenue. And again, like, we'll talk about this when we get to talking about the playoff format in a second. But, like, of course the players want to come back and finish out everything.
Yeah, they are going to get
– it's not simply just the escrow hit they're going to take next year for the 50-50 split that isn't happening this year. It is going to be a multiple season hit they'll take to make up the revenue if they don't come back
and
at least put a tourniquet on this thing. So the money on the table is a big driving force here. But I agree, like, you don't, especially when you think about how condensed the off season will end up being if we do come back and play. Like, the idea that you could dramatically lower the salary cap and then have all these teams having to make moves and trade players and cut guys when it's going to be a mad sprint at the beginning of next
season. Which is another thing that's
it's crazy.
But you're right. The thing here is when you look at it and say, okay, if there's no playoffs those numbers you gave, those are actually lower than I would have thought. So maybe that's better news, but, it's not so much the salary cap. It's going to be that escrow, because that will kick in. That's not something that the league is just going to waive. That actually is. And that's why, like, when the story came out a few days ago about how NHL players were still going to get all their paychecks, even if the season wasn't played, and people were like, oh, well, isn't this good news that the players are still going to get paid? And it's like, well, hold on.
Well, yes and no.
Cause they're giving it all, like, they're going to give it all back. If there's no 50-50 the revenue, if there is no and it's not true that there's no revenue, cause there's certain things that still do come in. So it's not like every dollar disappears, but there's going to be, like, you thought players didn't like escrow when it was 10 or 15%. We're going to have probably, or at least potentially, the nightmare scenario where not only do you not get any of your escrow back, but now the league is going to come to the players and say, you got to write us a check for even more, which.
And that's why the theory right now amongst the players is that it's not going to be like a 50% escrow hit next year or some shit. Like, it's going to be something that'll probably be installment payments, for lack of a better term, next year and the following couple of years, where they just increase it, you know, incrementally to make the money back. Because for those that don't know, like, the way it works is the players get paid, right? They just get their money, and then at the end of the season, the owners take a look at what the revenues actually were, and then they even it out 50-50, right? And so the players getting their last three paychecks one for two, I think, for services rendered, and then one for the games that they're missing. That's great, but like then the owners are going to see how much revenue didn't come in, and then they figure it out after the season,
right?
And it's going to be a hell of a thing.
And the way it's calculated with the revenue being divided by 31 teams, and that becomes the midpoint, and almost every team spends over the midpoint. So even in a good year where the league nails its revenue forecast and there's no shortfalls, the players still end up paying escrow, let alone in a league where in a year where suddenly they fall well under that. They're going to get, it's going to be a big hit. And you guys are right. That's why the players are pushing aggressively to play as much as they can when they get back, because every fan who goes into a building, every fan who buys a concession, any fan who any dollar that gets spent on the NHL this summer that wouldn't normally have happened, 50 cents of that goes right to the players. So we've been hearing for years about the players and the owners being equal partners, and it always kind of rings hollow, but in this case they actually kind of are.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we've mentioned it several times now. We might as well get into this players' plan that's happening. Frank Saravelli reported about it on TSN this week. A text chain amongst elite players coming up with a plan to potentially return to the season. I do love the fact that it's a text chain of elite players, and one of the first things that they do is sacrifice the All-Star game next season to make sure that they get this season done.
And by the way, shout out to everyone who thought they were an elite player, but you're not on the group text, and you're just kind of like awkwardly like, oh, okay. Like Ryan Getzlaff is sitting there like, no, okay, no, I guess maybe it blocked. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not on it.
If you ever needed further evidence that Philip Forsberg's not a star, just look at his text chain.
Exactly.
So the deal that they're talking about, this is the unofficial proposal. Late July could be the return. Training camps open in early July. They would play a truncated conclusion to the regular season that would wrap up by the end of July. That would obviously be, allow teams to even out their games. You got teams that have played 72, you got teams that have played 68, and also give them some warm ups before the playoffs. How would the playoffs work? Well, a 2-month sprint beginning in August, Stanley Cup awarded at the end of September, sounds like 7-game series to me. A 3 to 4 week transition period. Oof. Will follow in October with the draft, free agency, and training camps all happening in the span of a month.
Hell yeah.
And then the full 2020-21 regular season, condensed 82-game schedule, would start in November, and the Cup would be awarded again in late June 2021. Right,
which apparently is the league's big priority, is that whatever we do, we get a full season next year.
As it should be. I don't think that any concept that would shave games off of a season where you might be able to come back and play to crowds is a good concept at all.
Like unless we literally have to choose between 82 games next year or something less, and we get a Stanley Cup this year. Like that's where it becomes tricky. And
you think so? I don't understand harming a season.
Ask an average NHL fan if they'd rather have the Stanley Cup awarded in a somewhat fair and decent playoffs this summer and then a 70-game season next year, or skip the Stanley Cup and play 82 games next year. I think most fans are going to pick the Cup. They don't. I mean, the regular season is already too long and boring as it is. I mean,
even though the season's already fucked up, and even though it's going to be August when they do this?
I think so.
I don't know. I feel like hockey fans are really open-minded to weird shit right now when it comes to trying to complete the season and do the playoffs. I don't think that they need seven-game series. I don't think that they need
tradition. But it may not even be that. Kind of, you know, when I say like a full and fair playoffs, I don't necessarily mean four rounds of seven games, because you're right. We might not be able to do that. But I think honestly, if there's any scenario where you can, you know, pick whatever you think the most extreme version of the playoffs that still works is, you know, and I think hockey fans will burn a dozen or two dozen games from next regular season to get that. I don't think they'll have to think too hard about it.
Just for me, it's like, just make it as weird as possible. Like, all 31 teams are in. First round, single elimination.
Oh,
second round.
God.
Just like, because, I mean, who cares? Like, look, people still legitimately say, like, you know, the 95 Devils and the 2013 Blackhawks, like, oh, that has an asterisk on it, whatever.
How dare you?
Well, I'm just saying, people say, I don't care one way or
the
other.
It'd be the 2012 Kings, right, that I think would have the asterisk.
It was the Hawks. Yeah,
oh, okay.
I just said that. But like, okay, you're gonna go, okay, well, there's an asterisk for they didn't play the full regular season. Then there's an asterisk for, you know, they started the playoffs 4 months after the regular season ended, 5 months after the regular season ended. Then you know, there were 24 teams in the playoffs. Then, you know, it was the first three rounds were best of three series, and then the last one was a best of seven. And it's like, how many asterisks do you want to affix to that?
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. So at that point, just be as fucking wacky as you want. Who cares? Who gives a shit?
It's all fucked up anyway. Yeah, you're right.
The,
by the way,
the team that wins, their fans are going to think it counts, and literally everyone else is going to give them crap about.
And even then, I bet a lot of those teams' fans would be like, yeah, but not really, though.
But look, I've seen let the whole league in proposals from some people, and I agree with you, like, everything should be on the table. But let's be honest, 31 is an odd number, and there's absolutely no fucking way Detroit should be a playoff team.
That was my favorite, was the one that you guys in your ESPN piece on the different ideas, where the one guy was like, let's let in everyone who was still mathematically alive for the playoffs, which works out to literally everybody but Detroit.
Detroit.
I love the idea of like 30 teams walking in and then the door slamming in the face of the Red Wings and be like, no, everybody
if you're gonna do it again, like, just fuck it, let everybody in and then have a loser's bracket, and the winner of the loser's bracket gets Alexis Lafreniere.
Oh,
like, whatever. Again, who gives? And then you're like, well, you know, what if Tampa loses in the first round, and then, you know, they get to play for Alexis Lafreniere, like, you know, put him on a line. Yeah, but fuck it.
I think
we're all just flipping coins. Who cares at that point?
Yeah.
Our friend Adam Gold would like to reward that sort of success.
Exactly.
You've fought your way through it to get a high draft pick, right? Isn't that the whole point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Detroit
has 39 points and a -122 goal differential.
I mean, it's
really saved by the bell getting to -140. But
it is just the thing with this that is insane to me, and I understand it from a revenue perspective, but this like 24 team plan, and I know it has to be 24 because you want Montreal and Chicago to be in, like, that's the whole reason you put the cutoff there. But this idea that we're going to have more playoffs, that like we're going to come out of this at some point and be like, yeah, you know what, four rounds, not enough. We're going to have time for five rounds or whatever it would look like. Even a brief, like, I feel like, and look, I did this too. Like, I wrote a piece this week where I was like, let's talk about the different formats and just get weirder and weirder as we go. But it, like, realistically, you know, it's a fun discussion, but realistically, like, I think people are being wildly optimistic over, if this comes back, how much time will be available, unless we want to play in August and, you know, but just have guys skating around on slushies out there. And
And that's the other thing to say about it too. Cause right before all this happened, I read at least one, maybe even two or three, about like, wow, the compressed schedule after the All-Star game really leads to a lot of injuries. And yeah. then guys were like, okay, but what if we played 140 games from November to June? What do you think would happen then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trick. Exactly. Exactly. Or all they need is a mini camp to get ready.
The other piece that I keep seeing is this. We can't just come back and go right into the playoffs, because that's not fair to the teams that are going to just miss. They need a chance to win their way in. So we need to get everyone to 72 games or whatever it is. Like, so what are you going to do? You're going to go out, you're going to tell the Detroit Red Wings that they have to come back, leave their families, come back, practice, work out, and play two games that don't remotely matter to them. And that's your way, like, that's what's going to be fair to who makes the playoffs, again, is that you get to, like, beat the Red Wings 20-1 because they're literally barely even, like, they're putting in all-star game level of effort because they just want to go home.
Yeah. In front of 300 people. Like,
oh, yeah.
Who the fuck is even going to come to these games, these regular season games? And the other thing, too, is, like, part of the math in trying to come back is yep. is going to be arena availability. And you're going to be trying to reschedule your mm-hmm. shit at the same time the NBA is trying to reschedule its shit. At the same time, Disney on Ice is scheduling its shit.
Yep.
Concerts are scheduling its shit. Like, well, I feel like trying to bring everybody back for a few games yeah. is so overcomplicating what should be
and it's
16 buildings.
Yeah, like it's not like I know how to, like, you look in the playoff. Eastern race, right? And one of the teams that's right on the bubble is the Hurricanes. Okay, so a lot of people would say they've got to have a chance to earn their way in. Well, the Hurricanes' first game that's on the current schedule, their next game would be against the Devils. What the hell's going to happen when they play a team that's trying to make the playoffs plays? Like, could a team be more checked out than the New Jersey? Like, is that fair to the Islanders that the yeah. Hurricanes get to play? You know, it's just, I mean, there's no good options. But I'll say this, the other piece of this, and like Justin Bourne had wrote a piece about this. Are we even talking about 16 arenas? Or are we talking about one arena and no travel? Nobody goes anywhere. Like, yep. literally 16 to, or however many teams make the playoffs, come in and it's almost an Olympic Village situation where you're quarantined. You're on your own, and you're playing in the same building or the same couple of buildings. Nobody gets on an airplane. Nobody's traveling around from city to city, because that's just, you know, tempting.
That is the single greatest idea to give the Leafs home yeah. ice advantage in the playoffs I've ever heard.
I don't even know where you would do it, man. I don't even know.
The other part of this too is. From a U.S. perspective, as all perspectives should be, correct, Ryan?
Sure.
Part of the other part of the math on this is that if the NHL comes back for playoff hockey end of July into August, let's say, oopsie, that is also the time that currently, the Tokyo right. Olympics are scheduled for. And the IOC has shown no indication that they are moving off those dates. So the NHL was able to find real estate on NBC networks during the 2018 Winter Olympics, because there are fewer sports in the Winter Olympics, and NBC actually used NHL games as a lead-in to some of the Olympic coverage. If you're somebody who's consumed the Summer Olympics on NBC in the past, you know that they're putting shit on the fucking Golf Channel. Like, every single piece of NBC real estate is being dedicated to Olympic sport, whether it's steeplechase or fucking frisbee dogs, or I don't even know what the fuck. Like, every channel has something on it. So it's a little bit daunting to think that the NHL can come back and get the coverage that you'd expect for the Stanley Cup playoffs if you come back during Olympic time.
What does that do to your TV deals and everything else? Like, I'm with everyone. I want hockey to come back. I want there to be playoffs. I want there to be a Stanley Cup. There's an enormous number of hurdles that that's even in an ideal scenario yeah. where a month or 2 months from now, the worst of this is over and we can all come out and kind of resume something approaching normal life. It's, I don't want to be a downer, but if you're a hockey fan, at least start mentally preparing yourself for the fact that you're not seeing hockey again until next season, whatever that may be, and that may not be the first week of October either.
But boy, speaking of the U.S. versus Canada thing, they'll really do anything to make sure Ovechkin can't catch Gretzky, huh? Like, this is yeah, fucking unbelievable.
Right. Yeah, I know. I mean, it's kind of crazy that the Canadians...
Wayne Gretzky never missed any time to move on. I'm just saying. I'm not saying he's tougher. I'm not saying Canadians are, you know, but I'm just saying he back in the day, you played.
Brent Gretzky created a virus, you know, shot it into the middle of
China.
You
know, guys, what happened was the virus came for Wayne Gretzky, but you see, Dave Semenko was there, and he just cracked his knuckles.
Look, when Gordie Howe was in the NHL in 1918, and they canceled the, all that shit.
That's right. In 1918. No, I'm not doing a Stan Fischler now. Sorry.
Well, that's what that was. So, okay, if you say so.
There it is. Well, that's one of the impressions on the show. That's more of a parody than going for accuracy. Most of my impressions are accuracy.
Yeah, you're
like,
fucking
my God.
Rich Little.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
How the fuck?
Uncanny.
How the fuck did
I heard?
How the fuck
I heard there
Ilya
was an impression of me.
Greg's
I heard
it, most of them. That's an impression that falls under the category of has to be in the moment. And so it was an unexpected in the moment impression and done also more importantly with you not there, which I think is also something that typically happens. Like it's been in a situation where I've had people like any master impressionist, I also do impressions of my friends and stuff, and I've definitely had situations where people are like, do your impression of your friend Andy, and I'm like, well, not to his fucking face.
I mean, Ryan and I told everyone that you died in the episode that you weren't on, so I can't really complain about whatever it may be. By the way, has it occurred to you that maybe you just went under to get your tooth out and you just haven't come back yet, and this is all like some Twilight Zone.
Yeah, this is all Mandela effect shit. Yeah,
I'm trying to figure out, like, if this is all happening in my subconscious, the lesson I'm supposed to learn? Because I have thought about briefly that the lesson I'm supposed to learn out of all this is to like talking to people more, like value conversations more with people at like a coffee shop or something. Like I'm trying to figure out, like, from a societal education standpoint and from my own personal growth, like, what are the things I'm supposed to come out of this valuing? And could it just be that I'm under right now in the dentist office and I will wake up and be like, you know what? When someone tries to strike up a conversation with me, I shouldn't just completely dismiss them as being not worth my time.
That's good.
Maybe that's the lesson.
I think...
Right? Value a personal interaction more.
I think what happened is you were just like dentist chair getting ready to go under, and you looked up and noticed that the dentist had not washed his hands, and this has all just been a fever dream of your subconscious trying to make everybody wash their hands constantly.
It could also be a situation where this is my subconscious trying to tell me that you can wash your hands other than when you shit, which is usually the only time I wash my hands, to be quite candid with you.
Okay.
I don't know about the rest of society.
Hey, by the way, did you see this shit this morning where everybody from Chicago's leadership team is sticking around for next season?
Speaking of not washing your hands
this
after
season shortening
really
saved?
Bet, yeah.
Yeah, huh?
It's a really weird one. Like, the Stan Bowman one I get, just because it's really tough for organizations to move on from guys that have built championship teams, unless you're Ray Shiro. But like the Jeremy Colleton still being the coach there? Like, really?
That makes what was he supposed to do?
I don't know.
With that group? No, with that group? I don't think he could. I think the best case scenario for that group was always borderline playoff team, maybe. And that's what they more or less ended up being, despite all the, the season's over. Wait, the Blackhawks are for real. No, the season's over. Like, the articles every other week just shifting. Like, when you do that for an entire season, you're going to end up probably on the wrong side of the playoff bubble. And, like, that was always the best case scenario. I don't know what Jeremy Colleton could have done differently.
Yeah. I was really, you know, kind of hoping that Stan Bowman might end up in New Jersey. Like, I think they would have hired him lickety-split if he was available.
Yeah, but this is going to be... Stan
in Chicago.
Any teams out there were already predisposed to maybe not making a move, even though that might be unpopular, this is going to make that a lot easier to sell, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how many guys in the league got cover from this? Like, where, you know, they could just plausibly say, look, we were close.
Or just, you know, if the offseason is 2 weeks, it's like, well, Taylor, we got to...
Florida.
What can we do? So...
Yeah. The offseason is going to be very fucked up, and Taylor Hall is not only not going to make the playoffs, but then he's also going to have to decide where he's going to play amongst like one team, probably.
Yeah, nobody's going to be giving out big contracts this summer without moving substantial pieces, which is Edmonton's going to have to move some people around just because a team that not good is nonetheless capped out, and you know things are getting tighter all the time, that sort of thing. So. It'll be interesting.
Snark aside, does this exponentially increase the chances that Taylor Hall stays in Arizona?
Probably somewhat.
Like they don't have money.
They spent a shitload of money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're like a cap team now. I just remembered.
Yeah, they acquired Taylor Hall. They acquired Phil Kessel. Those are two expensive players, and I don't think there was much salary retained on either of those transactions, apart from Kessel's salary retained in Toronto from. Prior to the Pittsburgh trade, so
who did he piss off in a former life to have all this shit happen?
Jesus,
to him?
Poor
like,
kid.
Like 100 years of losing teams, fucking goes to Arizona. The season ends because of a pandemic, and they probably don't even make the playoffs based on points percentage. Oh, by the way, points percentage is the thing that should happen. Yes. They should just put 16 teams in.
Oh,
based
yes, of
on
course,
points percentage.
It's points percentage,
sorry, Columbus,
not
and sorry, Winnipeg.
If you play an uneven number of games, that's.
Yeah, yes. But also just like this regular season bit, like to go back to the playoff format thing, I've seen some people talk about the, like a 20-team thing. We have some play-in games or whatever. I still think that's pie in the sky based on the amount of runway we're going to have. But if you wanted to do it, you know I'm in favor of it because at the very least people will look at them and say, play-in games are fucking cool. Yeah. And then we'll get play-in games, which I want. But I think the more logical thing is that you just say, hey, look, sorry, team that played X amount of games. It's a really fucked up year. A lot of people died. And we're just going to do it by points percentage. And then we just go from there.
The right
like,
answer.
That's
if,
the solution.
I mean, I'm kind of with you. I wouldn't mind the play-in games, but it's – yeah, it's – you know, I'm sorry that the Winnipeg Jets are going to literally miss the playoffs by 0.001%. On points percentage, but that happens to other teams in 82 game years, and it's just sometimes close is not close enough, and this is a messed up situation, and we just got to make the best of it without trying to be, because whatever we do to make it more fair for one team is going to make it less fair for someone else, and what can we do?
Should have won that shootout. I don't know which one, but like that one.
Oh, I was thinking about that too. With would Columbus make the cut or no?
No.
The game John Tortorella was complaining about our goalie's got hurt or whatever, and we lost in the shootout.
Oh, yeah. Oh God. All right.
That becomes the difference between them making it and not making it, and that's insanely funny to me.
Yeah, they would not get in. They would be on the outside looking
that's
in
what
based
I thought,
on points
yeah.
percentage.
Yeah.
I think the Islanders and the Hurricanes get in. And then the Blue Jackets don't.
Insanely funny.
All right, hockey will come back, and we'll talk about for those who, we probably should have talked about this at the beginning of the show. Like we're gonna keep doing the show, and all the Patreon stuff's still gonna be there. We've been bandying about ideas on what to do with the format of the show. I think when there's news, we'll talk about it. But I think some of the shows are gonna end up looking and sounding like. The bonus episodes a little bit more where it's like topic focused, which will be fun. It'll give us a chance to do some different things and also probably get you guys involved in some ways as well. So, you know, news on that will come at a later date, but we'll keep you abreast of all of the news and hockey happenings surrounding those sort of single topic episodes. We promise not to do too much wrestling. But I do think that we do have to talk about it real briefly. First of all, WrestleMania will be held in the WWE Performance Center, where they train the wrestlers, it will be held on two separate nights, like the Japanese do. Rob Gronkowski will be the host of both nights. So that's how things are going for Vince McMahon these days. The XFL got canceled. WrestleMania is being held in a gymnasium, and Rob Gronkowski is the host.
And
of
not even a big gymnasium, like very small gymnasium. It like just seeing the. I haven't watched Raw or SmackDown in the last week, but just seeing the clips of them, you know, acting like they're in the full arena, doing all the bits and playing to the crowd that isn't there and stuff. It's beyond surreal. Like it's. It's truly
the problem
like
is
a.
That they didn't know how to acknowledge what was happening, right?
Well, sure.
The only time they did it, and it was really funny, is Stone Cold came out and did his whole pantomime routine, including getting on the turnbuckle and raising his arms, and like talking to the crowd that's not there. And they cut to all of the empty seats. And it was really funny.
Yes.
It was really, really clever. But that was like the only time they really acknowledged that they were doing all of this stuff, all their spots, the whole bit, inside of an empty gymnasium.
The only
and that's
positive
what made it really
is
awkward.
That finally they can go 30 seconds without cutting to some stupid crowd shot that ruins the moment and like some guy on his phone.
Yeah, they'll finally get what they want, which is nobody boos Roman Reigns.
But it's going
to be
terrible. Because like, people who don't follow wrestling, like WrestleMania every year, it's supposed to be like the big season finale. But what they do is they bring back all of these old timers who aren't good anymore, but get a huge crowd reaction. And that's why you bring back The Undertaker or Bill Goldberg or John Cena or whoever. And so they're going to have all these old guys who can't really work anymore, but get big reactions coming out in a gymnasium to no reaction and having terrible matches.
It happened last night. The end of AEW show last night was a surprise appearance by one broken Matt Hardy in the upper deck of the arena stadium thing that they were doing their thing in. And like, it's just silence, you know, like, it's surprising and stuff, but you do those moments for the crowd pop, and there's no crowd to pop, so it became very odd.
And you feel like, this whole like Edge coming back after whatever it is, 10 years of like legitimately career-ending neck surgery, and he's finally going to get his first match in a decade, and it's going to be in an empty building. It's going to be so strange. The other thing I saw somebody point out, and this is funny, is that like John Cena is legendary in wrestling for even when he's performing in front of 50,000 people, you can hear him calling the spots in the match, like basically telling the other guy what to do. Like, all right, I'm going to clothesline you. You got to duck. You got to do this. You got to do that. So in an empty arena, my God, it's going to be like getting the director's commentary.
That's
live.
The thing I was thinking of, like, I haven't watched it live, but it seems like, you know, because they're just in a big empty gym, like the announce teams and presumably for WrestleMania, they'll do they'll have the full, you know, the Spanish and the Russian and the Japanese and the Chinese announce teams. And they'll all just be like chattering over each other and you'll be able to hear them on each separate broadcast.
It's going to be like when all the crime reporters are outside of a trial, like a really big trial, and they're all like shoulder to shoulder next to each other. You can all hear them talking to their different affiliates. I've been singing the praises of this company on this podcast since they started, but like AEW once again got it right last night. What they did, for those who haven't seen it, the WWE is playing their matches literally inside of an empty gym. Like there's nobody in the stands.
And again, calling it a gym is like a little generous. Like it's smaller than a high school gym.
AEW did their show in an amphitheater. It was empty. But what they did was they had their wrestlers come out and sit around the ring and like talk shit during the match.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
And drink wine. MJF and Sean Spears were making bets on the matches. And it was fucking cool. Like there's the reason I like AEW is that there's a real sense of joy to what they do. And it's because the wrestlers kind of run the company. And last night it was very much a, hey kids, let's put on a show vibe. But it was also the difference between one federation that has done things the same way for decades, right? And only knows how to do one thing, which is to put on TV shows. And another federation that was born doing shit on YouTube and knowing how to sell to know people in backyards and shit like that. And you could really tell the difference because they knew how to pull off that show in a pretty miraculous way that I don't think the WWE could ever fucking figure out how to do. So it's pretty crazy.
Yep.
All right. Real brief before we get to a little quizzeroo. Anything you've been watching or reading in the last – or playing video game-wise in the last 2 weeks?
I returned to The Last of Us for the first time in several years. It's one of the best video games of all time. It's just like, you know,
a real pick-me-up.
Well, yeah, you know, it's maybe not for everybody in these times, but you know, I really love the story, and they have a sequel coming out at the end of May, so I wanted to like kind of get reacquainted with the whole deal with it, and it's fucking awesome. I beat it, you know, again for the first time in 4 or 5 years the other night, and I was just like, yeah, that's really good fucking storytelling. There's no two ways about it. It's just they did a great job with it, and you know, it's really replayable, even though it's a really linear story that has a very definitive ending. So I'm looking forward to the sequel now, and yeah, fucking, it's so good.
What about you, Shoddy? Anything?
Yeah, we've only been home for a few days, so I haven't really gotten organized, and I'm trying to balance entertaining two kids and still doing my, at this point, full-time job. So there hasn't been a ton, but the wife and I have started watching The Witcher on Netflix.
Oh, how is it?
And you know what? We're enjoying it. I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I have not read the books, but I have played the video game. And I think, like, I watched the first episode and I was kind of like, I wasn't really sure, like, what tone are they going for? Is this supposed to be like a serious Game of Thrones type thing, or is it kind of winking at me a bit? And it's sort of doing both. And having got into the next few episodes after that, like, it's good. We're enjoying it. Like, we're halfway through.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it's only 8 episodes. So, got a little ways to go, but yeah, it's sort of at the end of the night, you just want to see like some people get stabbed in the head. It's pretty good, even though we're completely confused half the time, because like every other form of entertainment these days, it's got like weird timeline shifting plots that like, you're just like, what is, and the characters don't age. So you're just completely thrown off. But yeah, it's, we're enjoying it. Thumbs up.
By the way,
it's
Greg, got, I forgot to tell, yeah. I forgot to say, Top Chef back tonight.
Damn right.
Hell yeah. Let's fucking go. Like,
and Padma was like all very much like, I don't know how to really say and promote my product, but,
please watch,
you know,
it.
Top Chef, please watch it. And she's like, I hope it brings you comfort. And I'm like, oh, that's such a Padma thing to say.
And by the way, it will. I love that show so much.
It will definitely bring comfort. Yeah.
I think at one point we said we would do a weekly show about this season of Top Chef, like on the Patreon feed or something. If you want to do that, let's do it.
I think that's a possibility, I think the wife would have to be invited too.
That's
to
fine. Great.
By the way, there may be some Quarren stream podcast with me and Ruby talking about some of the things that we've been watching that will drop on the Patreon. That's been something we've bandied about, and it all probably depends on what we're watching and how much wine we've had before we get in front of a microphone. I finished season 2 of You on Netflix, which is, for those who don't know, a show where Penn Badgley is basically a serial killer kind of guy who gets obsessed with some women. And it's twisted, but fun. And the second season takes place in L.A. and has a lot of really funny shit about how fucking dumb and weird L.A. is. And cracked open Breath of the Wild again, because there's nothing that makes me happier than playing Breath of the Wild, so I did that. And I think probably soon I'm going to crack open GoldenEye to play through that again, because we bought the cart a few months ago at a show we were at, and I haven't played it, but no time like the present. All right. We'll probably keep you guys abreast of what we're doing. And obviously, the Patreon mailbag that we'll be doing each week, we'll keep you abreast of what we're doing as well. But now, before we go on the main show here, I spent a good 8 minutes this morning cooking up a movie quiz for Sean and Ryan. It's a little game I like to call Outbreak, Contagion, or The Happening. I'm going to name an actor, and you tell me which movie this actor appeared in.
Okay.
Outbreak, Contagion. Outbreak, of course, the classic Outbreak Monkey movie that had Dustin Hoffman racing against time to save society from a disease. Contagion, the classic Steven Soderbergh movie where everybody was racing against time to stop a disease. And The Happening, M. Night Shyamalan's apocalyptic tale of trees trying to kill Mark Wahlberg. So I'm going to name an actor, and you tell me which one of these films the actor appeared in. Outbreak, Contagion, or The Happening. Who goes first? Who is our reigning champion in Puck Soup Quizzes?
I don't know.
Probably Sean.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't
know. All right, okay, great. Sure. Go for it.
Okay. Sean?
Yeah?
Cuba Gooding Jr., Outbreak, Contagion, or The Happening?
He was in Outbreak.
He was. That's correct. Yeah.
He played Major Salt in Outbreak.
I'll just tell you right now, I haven't seen two of those movies, but I've seen Outbreak about 30 times because I worked in a video store the summer it came to VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, sure.
It played. So I'm not saying I'm going to get all the Outbreak ones right, but that's my only hope in all of this.
What one might say when I was putting this quiz together this morning, I said to myself, he's definitely seen Outbreak a lot and probably has watched Outbreak on, like, commercial television. There's an outside chance he saw The Happening because of M. Night Shyamalan. There's no fucking way he knows anything about Contagion.
I've seen Contagion, like, three or four times, and I don't think the cast of The Happening is particularly big. So I feel like I have a pretty good shot of going perfect in this one.
Well, as we've talked about in the show, these are unprecedented times.
Yeah.
And Ryan feeling pretty confident about beating Sean in a quiz. all right, Patrick Dempsey.
I feel like he must have been in Outbreak.
That's correct. Yeah. He played Jimbo Scott.
Oh, why wouldn't he? Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Because when you look at Dr. McDreamy, you say, that looks like a Jimbo right there. Sean, Bryan Cranston, TV's Walter White.
Yeah, he was in Contagion.
That's correct.
Yeah, that was
a good story, right? R-A-D-M Lyle Haggerty. What does R-A-D-M mean? Like a DM, I guess, is like probably like a medical guy, right? Maybe military?
That I don't know. Sounds like I don't know.
Lyle Haggerty was his name. Ryan, John Leguizamo.
It's going to be either Outbreak or The Happening. I'm going to say The Happening because it's a little too contemporary. Yeah, okay.
John Leguizamo had a career that definitely spanned back to when Outbreak came out. But he, because that was right around the time when he had his most memorable role as Clown in Spawn. But he played Julian, as everybody knows.
Is that more memorable than Luigi Mario?
Now you're being facetious to my facetiousness. I don't think people remember anything about Spawn other than Todd McFarlane threatening to make another one.
Sean did all the NHL figures for a long time there. Remember that?
McFarlane? Oh, I'm not shitting on Todd McFarlane. McFarlane toys are awesome.
Sounds like.
I'm saying the Spawn movie is terrible.
Was he the guy who got sued by Tony Twist?
Yes.
Yes.
I was.
Okay. There was a character in Spawn named Tony Twist.
Yep.
Okay,
See how I try to wrestle this pop culture back to hockey?
To hockey. Yeah, I like it. Coming up, a future episode, a full oral history of Casey Jones from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, to tie it all together. Donald Sutherland, Sean.
Oh, Outbreak.
Outbreak, Contagion, or that's correct. Yeah. He was
the
General
bad guy,
Donald.
Right?
Yes, General Donald McClintock. That is a hell. First of all, his name was Donald in the movie. Always a good touch. Love that. And definitely looks like a McClintock, I think, if you look at him. All right, these are a couple tough ones. Now we're getting a little tougher. Ryan, Ferris Bueller's Day Off's own Alan Ruck, Outbreak, Contagion, or The Happening?
That... I'm going to say The Happening.
That is correct.
Yeah, okay.
He played Principal in The Happening. Principal.
Wow, Principal. Good for him. Good to see he was working before he got Succession.
Sticking with the theme of actors from Succession in movies about apocalyptic things happening in nature, Sean, Jeremy Strong from Succession, Outbreak, Contagion, or The Happening?
I don't know who that is.
Now we've got
the fact that you told me he's from the fact that you told me he's from Succession causes me to want to rule out Outbreak from 25 years ago. So I'm going to
look at this man using his noodle. That's great.
I'm going to say Contagion.
Unfortunately,
damn it!
It was The Happening. He played Private Ouster in The Happening. Alan Ruck and Jeremy Strong, Ryan, both in The Happening.
Wow. What a world.
Yeah. So this is for the win.
Okay.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, Lawrence Fishburne is 100% in Contagion.
That's correct. Yeah. He played Dr. Ellis Cheever in Contagion. Ryan wins a game in which he's seen all three movies and Sean's only seen one of them. Now, for the bonus point.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Here we go. Can you tell me, closest to the pin, not Price is Right rules, closest to the pin, the U.S. gross for The Happening? U.S. box office gross for The Happening, closest to the pin. Now remember, this was not a very well-received movie.
Yeah.
No, but
this was this was pre-crisis Shyamalan.
Let's see. What year did The Happening's what? Maybe like 2007 or 8?
The Happening was 2008.
Okay. I'm going to say like I'm torn between $40 million.
That was
$40 million.
Exactly. Wait, what I was going to say.
Said US or
US.
Global?
US.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna stick with 40. I'm gonna stick
that
with
was
40.
That was exactly what I was gonna say. I'm gonna say over, just because I don't trust the judgment of the American people these days. But I'm gonna 40 was exactly the number that popped into my head.
40 to me seemed like slightly too high. Maybe I'd even say 35, but 40 is like a good way to get right in the middle there.
$35 million. You're saying 40. And then you, Sean.
Sean's going 40 million and one.
I went over.
$1.
Yeah.
40 million one. The domestic box office gross.
Okay.
For The Happening.
Here we go. I got it.
Is $64.5 million.
Okay.
Sean,
okay.
Wow.
Gets the bonus point.
Wow.
I don't know
okay.
what the bonus point gives you or what it leads to. I just wanted to ask that question because I found
victory.
It fascinating. Moral victory, exactly.
Yeah,
a moral victory.
Fair enough.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope everybody's enjoying the apocalypse. I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Please do enjoy the stuff, the hockey stuff. We are. I have a column up today. The wish list continues unabated, in which I map out a hockey week for you when there is no hockey. So do enjoy that. And then also, apparently, I'm being told on Twitter that Belarus is once again playing playoff games.
Hell yeah.
So keep that in mind. Search out Belarusian playoff games on Twitter to experience the joys of not only substandard hockey, but translated captions on the closed captioning. It's really a goddamn joy. Ryan?
Sign up for the Patreon. I'm doing the newsletter on there, and we also have all the bonus episodes. So, the newsletter obviously with not much hockey stuff to talk about. I'm just doing like random lists. Like I think last week was my favorite active players. This week was some of my favorite kinds of hockey guys, like really fast defensemen and goalies who play a non-conventional style, like a Tim Thomas and that kind of thing. Just guys, of guys that I enjoy watching. So
I like it. It's good.
Can find me on The Athletic. A sports site without any sports to write about right now, and that has led to a lot of kind of creativity and weirdness, and anyone who reads my stuff over the years knows that during the summer I tend to go a little bit off the beaten path, and so you can imagine when the off season is potentially 6+ months long, what that's going to look like. But I've seen some of the ideas that even some of the other guys are coming up with, and it's pretty crazy. So it's going to be interesting if you subscribe, keep checking in, and if you don't subscribe, but think about maybe cashing in a trial or something now, and because we're gonna have a lot of time to sit around and read, and there's some really interesting stuff coming, and this week as I mentioned, I had that piece where I went through all different formats, and I tried very hard to stay normal, and I held it together for about half the post, and then by the end of it, I was suggesting that we hand out the Stanley Cup based on a Royal Rumble format where all 31 teams come in one at a time, and we don't know who's coming in on any given night, and it was, yeah, it's that should kind of give you a sense of where my brain is at these days, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. So.
Love it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening again. Thanks for supporting the Patreon. We're going to go do the mailbag there now, and we still have a Supotle to give you for the rest of this month. And then as Ryan and I have indicated, with idle time on our hands, definitely going to be a lot more content, I think, on the Patreon podcast wise and writing wise and all that stuff too. All right. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Bark soup.